It's been a little while since we did our last study. Our last study dealt with the attributes of God, and it was attributes of God part one. And so what we're going to do tonight as we get into part two is I'm going to do just a little bit of a review, help you remember what we did last time as we get into our study tonight, just because it's been a while since our last study. What we did in our first study that we had on the attributes of God is I made the point that different people classify the attributes of God in different ways, or they categorize them differently. So it can get a little confusing if you pick up a book. Typically what you find is the attributes of God are listed in some book that describes who God is, or the attributes of God are described in what's referred to as a systematic theology. And there are lots of systematic theologies that you can pick up. And they classify the attributes of God differently. Some people will say that the attributes of God fall into two camps. There's moral and non-moral. Some will say that the attributes of God fall into what's called the communicable attributes of God and then the non-communicable attributes of God. Almost sounds like a disease. something you get around somebody and you're going to get it, you know. When they say communicable attributes of God, all they mean by communicable is that there are some attributes that God has that we can have. In other words, God's a God of love, and we can love, and so we have some of the attributes of God, not quite to the degree that God has. There's a difference, but we can share in His attributes. It's probably a good way to look at it. The non-communicable, once I tell you what those are, it'll kind of help put everything together. Non-communicable attributes are attributes that God has that you and I can't possess. We don't have it. Or put it another way, you can't catch it if you're talking about a disease, okay? You can't get it, okay? And I'll give you an example. We talked about some last time. That is that God is invisible. Well, clearly you and I are not invisible. I can see you and you can see me, but we can't see God. All right? God is self-existing. Now, that's really non-communicable. In other words, what that means is that God, He sustains Himself by Himself. He needs nobody else. And one of the points we made in the very first study dealing with the attributes of God called Part 1 is we made the point that before there was a creation, there was God, right? Before there was a universe, there was something called God. And imagine God and nothing else. Imagine there being a God and there's no earth, there's no universe, there's no stars, there's no constellations, and no galaxies, there's no nothing. And imagine there being a God. What did He need to exist? Nothing. He existed because He existed. He is self-existing. He sustains Himself. He needs no water. He needs no air. He needs nothing. He is self-existing. And so that is something that you and I don't have, because we got created. And so that's a non-communicable attribute of God that you and I can't share in. But when we say that God is holy and God is love and God is merciful and God is just, we start talking about some of these different kinds of attributes. Those are things that you and I can share, and those are called communicable. So there's these non-moral and moral attributes, or some people classify God's attributes as communicable and non-communicable, and we've already talked about some of those last time. We made the point last time that what we're doing in this discussion about God's attributes is that we're picking and choosing. And I call them the distinctives of God because I'm classifying them a little bit differently. And one of the points we made, and it's the key point through all the attributes we're talking about, is this, really simple, is that God is infinite. And God is infinite in all of His attributes. That's an important statement that I just made. If you grab that statement right there, then anything we talk about, you got the right picture. As soon as we say that God is infinite in all of His attributes, that means when He loves infinitely. When we talk about His mercy, He is merciful infinitely. When we talk about the fact that He's eternal, guess what? That means that he's living what? Infinitely. Eternal is just another way of defining somebody who lives infinitely. When we say that he's self-existing, that means that he is doing it what? He's doing it infinitely. He sustains himself what? Infinitely. And so all of his attributes are infinite. Our God is an infinite God in all of his attributes. And that's why we use the terms like omnipresent and omnipotent and omniscience. And I'd like to propose tonight, and we'll get into it a little bit later on, so when we start talking about God is love and God is merciful and God is just, we're going to use a phrase that somebody else coined, and I think it's a great one. And we're going to call it the omnibenevolence of God. And the omnibenevolence of God includes love and goodness and peace and mercy and justice and righteousness and all these other things. It's the omnibenevolence of God. And the omni means what? He's infinite. And that's the point, that he's infinite in all of his attributes. Well, tonight I want to start by not talking about the ones we've already talked about, but we're going to talk about another one tonight called omnipresence. And you say, well, I already know all about that. There's nothing really new to learn. Well, what I hope tonight to do is not necessarily teach you something that you don't already necessarily know. I want to give you a different take on it. I want to get you to think about it. Turn to Psalm 139. Psalm 139, verse 7. Psalm 139, verse 7 talks about the fact that God is omnipresent. Now, when we say that God is omnipresent, what we typically mean is that he's like everywhere at the same time. You know, like he's present everywhere. And some people have some really weird ideas as to what that means. In fact, if we're not careful, we'll end up sounding like some of the Eastern mysticism or Eastern religions that say that God's in everything. He's in the plants. He's in the dog. He's in me. And we're all God. In fact, my next door neighbor, he says that we're all God. There's a little bit of God in you. There's a little bit of God in me. In fact, we're all connected in God. We're all God. God's in everything. And that's Eastern mysticism. That's not scriptural. Not a biblical perspective. I've always struggled with the idea, what does it mean that God is omnipresent? I mean, how can God be everywhere? I mean, like, how can this happen? And maybe the easiest way to get a grasp on this is maybe to think about an aquarium. Have you ever owned an aquarium? As a little boy, I owned an aquarium. It had guppies in it and swordfish and angelfish. And I mean, it was really cool. I had this big aquarium. As a little kid, I had a real small one, but when I got a little older and had some money, I bought a bigger one. And there was all these fish and stuff in it and snails and, you know, whatever. I had fun with this aquarium. Well, you know what? There wasn't any place those fish could go that could get away from me. Watch this. It was like they were before me. And it's like I was present. Didn't matter where they go, I was present. I could see them. Wasn't any place they could go that I wasn't there. Well, hang on to that thought. That's not going to help us completely understand the idea of omnipresence, but I think it gets us a step in the right direction. Psalm 139, verse 7 says, where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. And if I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. And if I take the wings of the dawn and I dwell in the utter remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me and your right hand will lay hold of me. And what the psalmist does is that it doesn't matter where you go, he's there. Doesn't matter. He's everywhere. Look at Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23 is terrific. Jeremiah 23, 23. I am a God who is near, declares the Lord, and not a God far off. Can a man hide himself in hiding places so I don't see him, declares the Lord? Do I not fill the heavens and the earth, declares the Lord? What does it say about our God? He fills the what? What does he fill? He fills the universe. He fills the heavens. He fills the earth. He fills everything, right? I mean, it's an incredible statement. Look at Isaiah 66. Isaiah 66 and verse 1. Thus says the Lord, heaven is my throne, earth is my footstool, and Where then is a house you can build for me? And where is a place that I may rest? In other words, the idea is like, you think you're going to build a house that I can fit in? I mean, like, you got to be kidding. I mean, the heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool, verse 2, for my hand made all these things. Thus all these things came into being, declares the Lord. But to this one I will look, to him who is humble and contrite of spirit and who trembles at my word. I like the last part of verse 2. It tells us what God's looking for. Somebody who's humble, contrite in spirit, and trembles at my word. Isn't that a great statement? Trembles at his word. Look at Job. Job 38. Job 38, verse 32. God is speaking. He's talking to Job, and he says, can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? What are those? Constellations, right? Verse 32. And can you lead forth a constellation in its season and guide the bear with her satellites? I mean, God's talking the stars. He's talking the constellations. This is incredible. And do you know the ordinances of the heavens or fix their rule over the earth? I mean, God says, who made all these things? And who controls them? The implication is that Job doesn't. The implication is God does. Now go to Genesis chapter 1. Look at verse 14. This is the fourth day of the creative acts of God. And in verse 14 we're told, and then God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years, and let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth. What's he talking about? He's talking about the sun. He's talking about the moon. He's talking about the stars. He's talking about everything. What does God say he made? What does God say he fills? God says he made all the stars. He made the constellations. He made the galaxies. He made all the stuff that's out there in outer space, what we call outer space, in the universe. Think about it. What kind of God builds all that stuff? What kind of God do you have to make all that stuff? Well, I think most of us are aware of something called Hubble Telescope. Hubble Telescope has transformed our understanding of the universe in ways that are rather mind-boggling. I think most of us are aware that we live in something that's referred to as the Milky Way. This is where planet Earth is. So we're here in this maze of stars, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of stars in this Milky Way. Where are we? Out here on the edge. We're not in the middle. If you were to look at this chart, we're like somewhere right about there. Right on the edge. That's our home. And this thing is just spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning. Incredible stuff. God also made something else called the Andromeda 1 galaxy. Anyone have any idea how far away that thing is? Try 2.5 million light years. That's a long ways away. You know what that means? That means it takes 2.5 million years to get there traveling at the speed of light. You can get in your Ford, or you can get in your Volkswagen, whatever it is you want, and you can start driving. And if you could get it to go faster than 60 miles an hour, like the speed of light, it would take you 2.5 million years to get there. Now, there is a closer galaxy called the Canis Major Dwarf, and it would only take you 25,000 light years to get there. Imagine a God who made something that would take you 2.5 million light years to get there. Or how about the Aquarius Dwarf? The Aquarius Dwarf, it turns out, is the 44th closest galaxy to us. And it's not 2.5 million light years away. It's 3 million light years away. Now there's another one. After a while, they get really creative. Because there's so many stars, they call it the NGC 5102. They're really creative. They've run out of names. And this is that galaxy. I mean, it's just like a blip. It's so far out there. That's out there 11 million light years. Not 2.5, not 3, it's 11. Turns out in April 2013, that's like just a little bit over a year ago, Hubble telescope found another bunch of galaxies. What they did is they pointed it into a dark space of our universe where they thought there was nothing there, and they had Hubble telescope look at it, and they kept looking at it and looking at it, and guess what they found? They found all that stuff. They just found thousands upon thousands upon thousands of galaxies in what was supposed to be nothing. It was dark. It was black until they put Hubble telescope and they looked at it for a long time in order to see it. And they found out that the farthest star out here is 13.2 billion light years away. That would mean that it would take you 13.2 billion light years to get there. Scientists have estimated that there is 10 to the 25th number of stars in our universe. Think about that. 10 with 25 zeros after it. That's how many stars are in our universe. In fact, if you were to go to the NASA website, they are talking about the fact that the universe is infinite. Did you hear that keyword? They're saying that they could just go and point again in another black area, and they could get Hubble telescope to look at it long enough that they believe that there's more galaxies in that black area. And if they can just keep doing it, they'll find more and more. They believe that the universe is infinite. But what was interesting is at the end of the article, they made the comment, but we know that probably it's not infinite. It's really probably finite because we know about the Big Bang Theory. And they say we can't prove it because we haven't looked there yet. So you know what the point is? Is that they really believe that the universe keeps going because every time they look in a black area, they just find more stuff. More stuff and more stuff and more stuff. At NASA website, they said they believe that the universe is actually infinite, but we can't prove it yet. Well, think about your God. What kind of a God do you have that can make something that big? Can make something that enormous. And guess what? If he made it, he's there already. Right? If he made it, that tells you something about our God. Our God is present everywhere. You know, if I was to make something out of wood, that wood is going to be in my presence, right? And so if you have a God who makes something that is this enormous as our universe, that tells you our God's bigger than the universe. Gives you an idea as to who he is. Gives you an idea that our God is really incredible. What did Jeremiah 23:23 say? Do you remember? Go back. Go back to Jeremiah 23:23. Jeremiah 23:23. Can a man hide himself in hiding places so I do not see him? Implication is you can't get away. Do I not fill the heavens and the earth? God says, it doesn't matter how big the heavens are, I fill it. And then look at Job 28, verse 24. Job 28, 24. Job 28, 24 says, for he looks to the ends of the earth and he sees everything under the heavens. Our God, he sees everything. I was thinking to myself, what would it be like if our God wasn't present everywhere? What would it be like if you could hide from God? I mean, some people would like to hide from God. They'd like to be able to do something and don't want their neighbors to know about it, don't want their wife to know about it, don't want their husband to know about it, and certainly they don't want God to know about it. I mean, have you ever thought of what it would be like if God wasn't omnipresent, if God wasn't everywhere? Did you know there's a problem if that's true? Did you know that if God wasn't omnipresent, you got a major problem? And you know what that problem is? is that you could end up someplace where God wouldn't be with you. Remember what Jesus said? Jesus told his disciples, he says, "Lo, I am with you," what? "Always to the end of the..." Well, guess what? If God isn't omnipresent, then you can't be guaranteed that he's with you always to the end of the age. You can't be guaranteed that God's with you always, because you could somehow maybe disappear and he wouldn't know where you are. And all of a sudden, now you really are on your own. You're stuck. Did you know it's really cool to know that God's omnipresent? I mean, it's not just something you take the check mark and you, okay, God's omnipresent. I got that one down. Really cool. No, there's an important reason that you want to know that God's omnipresent, because there's no place you can go and somehow disappear from his presence. He's with you always. There's another one, another attribute of God that's really great, and that's the omniscience. Try omniscience. Look at Luke 6:8. Luke 6:8. And we'll pick it up at verse 6. It says, "And on another Sabbath he entered the synagogues and was teaching, and there came a man. There was a man there whose right hand was withered, and the scribes and the Pharisees were watching him closely to see if he healed on the Sabbath, so that they might find reason to accuse him." So here's a guy with a withered hand. There are the religious leaders present. They want to accuse Christ. Verse 8, "But he knew what they were thinking." That's really cool. Jesus knows what they're thinking. Jesus knows what you're thinking. There is not a thing you can think. There is not a thing you can do that Jesus doesn't know what you're thinking. In Matthew, there's a very interesting statement Jesus makes. He says, "All of us will answer for the words that we speak." Did you know that? It's going to come a day, and we'll have to answer for every thoughtless word we speak. What does that tell you about his ability to remember? What does it tell you about God's omniscience? His knowledge. What does that tell you? It tells you it's unlimited, because he's keeping track of every one of us. How many people do you think there are in the world? Maybe 100? Obviously not, right? There's a lot of people, right? He's keeping track of all of our words. How many words do you think you speak in a day? How many people do you think have been living already over the whole planet from day one? That tells you something about our God. Well, look at Psalm 147. Psalm 147, and look at verse 5. It says, "Great is our Lord, and abundant in strength. His understanding is..." What's the word? His understanding is what? Infinite. It's endless. His understanding is endless. Look at 1 Chronicles chapter 28 and look at verse 9. "As for you, my son Solomon, know the God of your father and serve him with a whole heart." God's talking to Solomon. God tells Solomon that he is to serve him with his whole heart. "A willing mind, for the Lord searches all hearts and understands every intent of the thoughts." Now, isn't that interesting? How do you think God understands the intent of your thoughts? How does God understand the intent of your thoughts? What's interesting about the verse is it tells us that God knows your thoughts, right? And it just assumes that you understand that he knows your thoughts. What this verse is talking about is that he understands even the intent of your thought. Now, that's an interesting idea. Is that God understands your reasoning, how you got there. But keep reading. Notice what the rest of it says. "And if you seek him, he will let you find him. And if you forsake him, he will reject you forever." Now, you've seen this statement before, right? Have you noticed how many times this idea of seeking him keeps coming up in Scripture? We put you onto it some months ago. It's the idea that if you seek him, he will let you what? Find him. God wants our seeking. And here's another verse. It gets dropped right here in 1 Chronicles. And here you see it. God is interested in our seeking. It's an important truth that many believers miss. Look at Proverbs chapter 3, verse 19. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. I like that. And by understanding, he established the heavens. What does that verse say? Well, what that verse tells us is that when God created the heavens, and when he created the universe, he did it by wisdom. He did it by knowledge. When we were going through our study in Genesis chapter 1, we found out that God made one thing on day 1. He made something else on day 2. He made something else on day 3, 4, 5, 6. He made different things. And I kept making the point as we went through Genesis chapter 1 is that we're only getting the summary statements. We're only getting summary statements. Like in verse 1 of chapter 1, we read, "And in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light, and God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness, and he called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning one day." That's the first day. All we're given is a summary statement. And what we don't stop to think about is all the things that God had to do to make it happen. What we don't think about is all of the what we call the natural laws that God put in place. Or the physical laws. I took a class in physics, a number of classes when I went through my schooling. And it's amazing all the different kinds of laws you're taught. I was taught about gravity, although most of us take an apple, we could drop it, we know gravity works. But I was given the equations. Did you know that? Did you know there's actually an equation you can calculate that tells you how things work? I mean, it's really amazing. And I was taught about the law of thermodynamics. I was taught about Kepler's laws. Did you know that there is something called pi? Most of us, when we went through school, you probably had to calculate the area of a circle, and you got this number. It was 3.1415926, and it keeps on going, and we call that pi. Well, did you know there's a number called E? There's another letter called C. We call that the speed of light. There's something called Faraday's constants, and we give it a capital F and a small c. There's a whole slew of what we call constants. And guess what? They're natural constants. They're constants that are at work in the universe, and no matter what you do, we find out that they are a certain number. Did you know that pi doesn't change over here? It doesn't change in 2 weeks. 1 month, 1 year. It's amazing, these constants. Scientists have found out that they exist. They're able to get the number because they perform certain calculations and they find out that the missing number is these constants. And if they don't put them in the equations, they don't work. Well, guess who created the constants? God. And guess who created Kepler's laws? And guess who created the law of gravity? And guess who created all this stuff? And guess what? And he did it on day 1, he did it on day 2, he did it on day 3, he did it on day 4, he did it on day 5, he did it on day 6. He doesn't tell you he did that in Genesis at all. What he does in Genesis, he just gives you the big picture. And all you're given is a summary statement. And imagine all the stuff that God had to do to make this happen. That's called knowledge. That's called wisdom. And he pulled it off. And you and I, we marvel at it. And the scientists are going, like, wow. And the scientists are off trying to discover stuff. And they keep finding quarks and they find all these weird stuff, you know, that we talk about, we think about. And scientists are amazed at all the things that they find. Just amazing things that they find. And God is the one who put it there. Tells you something about God. God is wise. He is knowledgeable beyond our understanding. There's another one called omnipotence. Look at Psalm 33, verse 6. Psalm 33, verse 6 deals with God's omnipotence. Here we're told, by the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and by the breath of his mouth, all of their hosts. Now, this isn't the issue of knowledge. This is emphasizing the idea that he's able to do it. It's his power. It's his creative acts. Look at Jeremiah 32. Jeremiah 32 echoes the same basic idea, but in a different way. It says, "Ah, Lord God, behold, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power and by your outstretched arm, and nothing is too difficult for you." I like that, that nothing's too difficult for you. Some years ago, somebody wrote me a little question at neverthirsty.org, which is my website, and I think they wanted to see what I would come up with. Our website, you're able to ask a question. We will answer the question. We will post it for you. And the person asked the question about God. He says, "Can God make a rock that's so big that he can't lift it?" And of course, he's going to criticize us. We say that God can't make a rock that's really, 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 really big. He's trying to make the point that God should be able to make this really huge rock that he can't lift. And then you've got a God who isn't very powerful because he can't lift it. That's the basic idea. And as I thought about it a little bit, I began to realize that he had a low view of God. Because the right view of God is what? It doesn't matter how big he makes this rock, he can always lift it. Because I have what? I have an infinite God. I have a God who's infinitely powerful, and it doesn't matter how big he makes the rock, he can always lift it. He's got a low view of God that somehow says that there should come a point at which he's incapable of doing anything. And the other thing is, God's too wise to want to do that anyway. Why would he do that? It's a stupid idea. We have a God who is infinitely wise and infinitely knowledgeable, and he's infinitely powerful. And so this is a trickster's question is what it is. And why waste your time on it? Look at Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55, verse 8. "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." God would never try to make a rock that he couldn't lift. Doesn't matter how big the rock is, you can always lift it. I like that. God's not like us. I like the psalmist. He says, "You thought I was like you. You thought I was like you." God says, "You thought I was like you." And the answer is, yeah, we do. We put God in our little box. Our God is beyond our understanding. Think about this for a second. What would it be like if your God wasn't omniscient? You didn't know everything. What would it be like? What would happen? What would happen if our God wasn't omniscient? If God wasn't omniscient, then he could get surprised. If he didn't know everything about you, if he didn't know everything about your circumstances, how could he ever protect us? How could he ever be our rock? How could he ever make a prophecy about the future? Now we say, well, he's going to make it happen. That's his omnipotence. Yeah, but there's omniscience that's required to go along with this thing, right? I mean, think about God's attributes when you start thinking about your life as a believer. It is beautiful to know that there isn't any place you can go that he isn't there. It's wonderful to know that he knows everything about you. He even knows how many hairs you have on your head or you don't. Some of us don't have much left. Some of us is going disappearing. That's really great to know that God knows everything that there is. Everything about you. He knows everything about your body. He knows what's wrong before the doctors do. And he's powerful. Watch this. There isn't anything that he can't do for you that he wants to do for you. There isn't anything. We have a God who is incredible. You can trust him. He made this enormous galaxy, including you. One of the things I've always enjoyed thinking about is that God put me in my family. gave me my parents. You know, all the negatives and positives that come along with being in a family. God put me in this country. He could have put me in Russia. He could have put me with some other parents. But God put me in a family. He put me in the United States. Why? Because that's where He wanted me to be. He has the wisdom to do that. He has the power to do that. He's incredible. And I can trust Him for it. The last attribute is the one we already introduced earlier, and that is that God is omnibenevolent. And what we mean by that is that when He loves infinitely, when He loves infinitely. When He shows mercy, He has an infinite amount of mercy, and He will use that and provide that as required. When it comes to goodness, God is infinitely good. When God is holy, I just love that idea. He's infinitely holy. James says there's no shadow of turning, there's no darkness in Him. Right? We have a God who's infinitely holy. He doesn't want to do anything bad. Isn't that cool to think about it for a minute? When it comes to being good, we don't have a bad God. Flip all the attributes. Think about it for a minute. How about a God who's in a room in a house? That's where He's stuck. And oh, by the way, and all He knows is what He's been reading in books. And the amount of power He has is only what He's been getting by barbells, right? And when it comes to being good, He's not really good, He's bad. And when it comes to love, He really hates. And when it comes to mercy, He doesn't show any mercy. And when it comes to holiness, He's not holy, He's evil. And when it comes to just, He's not just, He's really partial and biased. I mean, what kind of a God would that be? I don't know if you think about it for a minute. It's wonderful to know what the attributes of God are. It tells you what kind of God you have. Otherwise, you could have one of the gods of the Babylonians, like Marduk. Have you ever listened to any of the gods of the Greeks or the Romans? I mean, some of them were the pits. Watch this. We have a God who is incredible. He's infinite in all of His attributes to the nth degree, and all of it's to our advantage. That is something you can bank on. So next time you are struggling in a trial and you're wondering if God is with you, guess what? He's infinitely with you. And if you can trust Him, He's infinitely trustable. I'll create an attribute. We have a God who you can trust all the way. It is really cool to see who our God is. Job 11, you'll enjoy this, so please turn. Job 11 and verse 7. Can you discover the depths of God? Zophar is speaking. Can you discover the limits of the Almighty? They are high as the heavens. What can you do? Deeper than Sheol, what can you know? Its measure is longer than the earth and broader than the sea. And if He passes by, or shuts up, or calls an assembly, who can restrain Him? For who knows false men? And He sees iniquity without investigating. What He's saying is that, like, who can frustrate Him? He has power. Who can restrain our God? We can't restrain our God. He does what He wants. He's sovereign. Let's pray.